From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Maggie Wall. Both sides of the Sitka Sound herring lawsuit presented oral arguments this week. The suit brought by the Sitka Tribe of Alaska seeks to preserve the traditional herring spawn subsistence fishery. ADF&G scientists confirm what many fishermen knew anecdotally. 2019 was a hot year, and the warm water temperatures killed hundreds of thousands of sockeye salmon transiting Bristol Bay to their home streams. And finally, Alaska's small shellfish farmers would take a big financial hit if a budget proposal from the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation is approved. The DEC is looking to shift the cost of shellfish testing to the farmers, a move which some say would put them out of business. All that coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report, right after this.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
The tribal lawsuit over herring in Sitka Sound boiled down to one question this week. Does the management of the commercial seine fishery still allow residents a reasonable opportunity to harvest enough spawn for subsistence? Attorneys for the Sitka Tribe of Alaska and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game offered polar opposite views on the issue during oral arguments in Sitka Superior Court on Tuesday. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Both the Sitka Tribe and the state have made cross motions for summary judgment in the case, with the tribe arguing that fisheries managers are failing to comply with the state's own regulations for the Sitka Sound sacro herring fishery spelled out in Alaska Administrative Code. Attorney Andrew Erickson spoke on behalf of the tribe. Although the venue for the case is Sitka, Erickson and the other counsel appeared before presiding judge Daniel Shally in his courtroom in Juneau.
That's where we are now. We're filing a declaratory judgment asking this court to declare what the regulation means.
Erickson argued that the court needed to fill the gaps in statute to ensure that the law was followed. The state's position, since the case opened in 2018, is that the authority to implement fisheries regulations lies with the Alaska Board of Fisheries, not with the courts. Attorney Michael Stanley represents the Southeast Herring Conservation Alliance, an intervener in the case on behalf of the state. Stanley argued that the Sitka Tribe was bypassing the board process and hoping to catch a break in the courts.
The notion that the board has failed to take a hard look at the issues involving these fisheries is absurd, frankly. Now, counsel for the tribe know this. So they did what any team of lawyers that zealously representing their clients would do. They cast about for a hook with which to snag some relief, and they landed on 5 AAC 27195.
That's the specific Alaska Administrative Code covering the Sitka Sound sacro herring fishery, which says the Department of Fish and Game, quote, shall distribute the commercial harvest by fishing time and area if the department determines that it is necessary to ensure that subsistence users have a reasonable opportunity to harvest the amount of herring spawn necessary for subsistence uses, end quote. Stanley went on to suggest that trying to establish the meaning of reasonable opportunity was not a problem the courts could solve. The tribe countered by diving into a deposition made by state biologist Eric Coonrat, who manages the fishery. Attorney Erickson quoted from portions of the deposition where Coonrat testified that, all things being equal, he would allow a commercial opening to occur on the border of the closed subsistence area if the fish there were more marketable than another school farther away. Erickson said that this testimony clearly identified the state's priorities were not aligned with statute.
That's the essence of this claim, is that they're subjugating the subsistence priority to the needs of the commercial fishery. And they're saying that the closed area mostly took care of everything. But it's essentially, there's no fish getting into the closed area if they're opening the commercial fishery right on the border and intercepting all the fish.
Erickson cited additional testimony in which the state biologist said he had no access to any data during the fishery which would allow him to determine whether subsistence harvesters had reasonable opportunity. Erickson suggested that this was concrete evidence that the state was out of compliance with its own requirement for reasonable opportunity. Judge Daniel Shalley made no ruling following the hour of argument, but took the matter under advisement and promised a decision soon. The court is certainly aware of the time factor, he said, given that we're in late January and this fishery, if it occurs, is in late March. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
2019 was the hottest year on record for Alaska. It was also the hottest year for Bristol Bay, home of the largest sockeye salmon fishery in the world. Fish deaths due to the heat have been documented in inland rivers in Alaska. Scientists now say in certain rivers in the bay, that heat was deadly. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Izzy Ross reports.
The sun beat down relentlessly on Bristol Bay this summer, heating up the rivers and lakes where millions of sockeye salmon returned to spawn. July was the region's hottest month on record, and in some rivers, that heat was lethal. Tim Sands, an area management biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, estimates tens of thousands of fish died.
Based on the catch rates we normally see and the escapement we normally see, well over 100,000 fish died in the river.
Sands is talking about the Agushik River on the west side of Bristol Bay. It's a long, winding, muddy river in the Nooshigak District. By early July, biologists were expecting an average of 15,000 fish to swim upriver every day. Sands says instead,
we saw 714 fish go up the Agushik by the tower on July 8th. The lack of fish moving up the Agushik River definitely was abnormal.
Salmon won't swim through water once it reaches a certain temperature. Water loses oxygen as it gets warmer, and the warmer it gets, the more oxygen fish need. As fish crowd on the bottom of a river waiting for the water to cool, they have less and less oxygen to breathe. Sand says about 500,000 fish should have escaped upriver to spawn. They only counted half that.
The difference could have been all dead fish. That's why I'm saying at least 100,000, because truthfully, I believe, it could well have been over 200,000 fish, because that's what we're missing from the escapement.
Bristol Bay did have a huge harvest this summer, the second largest on record. So when the heat broke toward the end of July and the fish pushed upriver, Agushik fishermen were actually able to catch more fish than usual. But that didn't translate to a great season for everyone. Set netter Stephen Davis says the heat's impact on the fish and other related costs made a big dent in his bottom line.
It was really hot, so the fuel cost was more because we was constantly running to the tender because we don't have ice there. And it's just everything just culminated into a massive loss.
There were also signs of heat stress in Ugashik on the east side of the bay. The fish weren't swimming upriver. In July, the fishermen had a lengthy closure, sitting on the beach for days as they waited for the heat to break. Birch Block has fished in the district for 8 years, and he's never seen a season like last summer.
Seeing these fish not being able to swim correctly and just acting so lethargic, and when the tide went out, they just couldn't even stay in the water. They would just end up like lying on the banks of the mud. I've never seen a salmon that is still ocean bright acting in such a way.
Sands, the biologist, doesn't expect last summer's die-offs to have any long-term impacts to the run. His concern is that as the summers get hotter, there might be a year when the weather doesn't break in time for fishing, and many more fish could die. For Alaska's Energy Desk in Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
A Department of Environmental Conservation budget proposal could mean some rough years ahead for small shellfish farms in Alaska. Testing shellfish for harmful toxins is currently subsidized at 100%, but this proposal would split the fees 50-50 between the farmers and the state. KMXT's Kavitha George has this story about how the fee increases could put some small shellfish farmers out of business.
Margot Ravel and her husband have owned and operated Jackaloff Oyster Co. in Homer's Kachemak Bay for 7 years.
Our farm, it's primarily oysters. We do a little bit of mussels and scallops, but primarily oysters. I would say 99%.
Revelle regularly sends samples of her oysters to the DEC lab in Anchorage to make sure they're healthy to sell. She spends around $100 to ship each sample, once a week in the summer and once a month in the winter. The testing itself is paid for by the state. DEC Commissioner Jason Bruni estimates it's about $500 to $700 per test. But Bruni is looking to shift some of that cost back to the industry, proposing that farms start paying half the testing costs. Eventually, he says he'd like to see 100% of the testing fee fall to farmers.
For many industries, the testing is paid for 100% by their industry.
The DEC lab in Anchorage is the only FDA and National Shellfish Sanitation Program approved lab in Alaska, so it's the only place in state to get commercially grown shellfish tested. Bruni says shellfish farms have had about a decade of completely subsidized testing, and now it's time to start pulling back.
We want to foster diversification of our economy, but we also have to make sure that we're paying attention to what should be funded and what shouldn't be funded from the limited state resources that we have.
Shellfish farmers in Alaska face unique challenges. It's expensive to operate, and they're often shipping product from far-flung areas with unpredictable weather. Farmers like Revelle say it's impossible to try to help the growing industry while taking away that state support.
We can't just raise the prices because we already have the competition of outside Alaska oysters, even Mexican oysters, that we have to compete with. If the state wants to support this industry and see it grow into something viable, then there should be some state participation starting out.
Revelle says oyster farming is a big commitment, requiring at least 5 to 7 years of permitting and growing the oysters before farmers see a profit. Their proposal, which would kick in a matter of months if it passes, came as a shock. If it does pass, Revelle says they probably won't be able to support selling oysters to Homer's summer crowd anymore.
It would probably push us into harvesting more in the fall, spring, winter months when we have fewer tests required. But that's also more dangerous season to be over there and harvesting, so it makes it all more stressful.
And if they end up having to cover the full testing fee?
At that point, it would just shut us down. I just don't see how a small farm can manage that.
Reporting on Kodiak, I'm Kavitha George.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, 1-800-992-4960, or online at alaskaboat.com.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Robert Woolsey at KCAW in Sitka, Izzy Ross with Alaska's Energy Desk in Dillingham, Kavitha George here at KMXT, and Lainey Welch from Alaska Fish Radio. For your fishermen, be careful fishing. Your family wants you to come home safely. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Maggie Wall.